You're listening to Death of the Reader, and welcome to the second week of review season. Heads,
hi, flakes.
Whew, I'm a little out of sorts after a just spectacular Christmas yesterday.
I know, I love Christmas.
How will was have been your Christmas?
I'm sure my Christmas will have been fantastic. I'm spending it with the family, which is always nice. We do this thing where we hang out with my mum's family on Christmas Day and my dad's family on Boxing Day, which is today ostensibly, I believe. And that's great. I love hanging out
with
the family.
Did they will enjoy the gifts you give them?
Well, it's funny you should ask about that, because I'm actually, or I will have, this is getting confusing, Flex. I think we need to pick a lane here. when Christmas will have to have happened, they will be receiving, all of my family members have received Taylor handpicked murder mysteries. I ended up picking both from the list of this year and also from books we haven't even done yet. Books that we might be doing next year.
That's very exciting.
Maybe even. That's very exciting. Yeah, I managed to. I had a hard time with my mother, dearest, because she doesn't like reading long books or books with violence. So I picked the Baby Ganesh series for her. I figure it'll probably be fine.
Yeah, let's just throw straight over to your review of Magpie Murders to kick off today.
Yeah.
I will say, Herds, I have some minor criticism to make of your review after we've listened to it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But let's just throw into that. You're listening to Death of the Reader. This is review season.
You're listening to Death of the Reader. This is Herds watching over you from above like a bird soaring through the sky as we make our way through review season, cataloging each and every murder mystery that we covered this year on the show. Without further ado, let's talk about our 12th place so far in review season, of which novel we would recommend the most. None other than Anthony Horowitz's Magpie Murders, a story that took us under its wing for not one, but two murder mysteries with completely different detectives, Watsons, and culprits. Let's get down to the brass tacks. We covered Magpie Murders as part of a stretch of stories involving metafiction, a broad subgenre which covers narrative approaches like the art of drawing up stories within stories or leaning on the fourth wall, a classic technique. Magpie Murders does both of these through the use of an in-universe writer by name of Alan Conway, who writes his version of the Magpie Murders within the actual story of the Magpie Murders as written by Anthony Horowitz. Now, Conway's version stars a dying elderly German gentleman as detective by name of Atticus Punt, and at a certain point in the novel, Conway himself is the subject of a murder investigation written by the actual real-life author, Mr. Anthony Horowitz. Thus begins the effort of Conway's editor, Susan Ryland, to pore over the text of the murder mystery that he wrote about Punt before they both became embroiled in a murder plot for clues to the crimes that unfold through the latter half of the book in her real life. If this all sounds kind of confusing, then I really shouldn't go on to talk about the characters. There are roughly 1,000 of them, all of which are given a lot of time to breathe and really chew the scenery. And this really is one of the most enjoyable parts of the novel. So many little details about the country town that Atticus Punt is tasked with investigating as a detective come back much later with greater significance, and there are multiple chapters dedicated only to the suspect lineup while Atticus Punt is not present in the novel, so we know exactly who is on the chopping block for the murder of Mary Blackiston, whose death kicks off the plot and story within the story, and then for the murder of one Magnus Pye, a rich old pompous gentleman who is found, of all things, decapitated with a medieval sword. It's not the most original death, but the circumstances imply a lot for the characters, and that's something that continues through every clue woven deftly into the fabric of the tale. Now, I love metafiction. I truly would have loved to put this novel further up the list. It does some incredibly clever things, such as the many literary treats that our esteemed colleague Andrew Popel managed to uncover when he guested on our show, solving the mystery himself while we watched on in awe. And the way that it uses knowledge of genre fiction to create clever puzzles for the reader, I truly believe it to be possible to pre-solve the murder mystery using only the opening pages, a section written by Susan Ryland, our point of view character for the unfolding real world mystery, as she describes the many tales that have led her down a career in editing. This is the level of cleverness present in the text. However, I do think that the story outstays its welcome by the final pages. There are so many clues and clever literary devices and characters and backstories and twists and turns. I really think this novel could have been about a third shorter, and that would have managed to keep the plot just a bit more focused. The answers to specific puzzles are generally very good, and the playful cleverness of Mr. Horowitz is undeniable. However, I think that the lesson of the story is a bit muddled, and Horowitz is a bit too keen to undermine the female protagonist in the final confrontation of the book. Overall, I think this is a story that is better studied and analyzed than it is to be read, and you will need to find a lot of time to dedicate, as it is not exactly a smooth read from start to finish. Magpie Murders by Anthony Horowitz is a novel that I can hardly recommend if you have a lot of time to pore over the text like an ancient scroll, and ideally camp out in a public library so you can cross-check it with the other great works of fiction that it makes reference to. In this way, you will get the most out of the experience. For those who are more interested in a casual or even fun read, I think there's plenty of other books that you will be better to pick up rather than attempting to make your way through this titanic undertaking of a novel. You're listening to Death of the Reader. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast for all of your murder mystery needs going forward, and check out the show's Twitter at Flex and Herds for updates on our plans going forward. This is Herds, and you're listening to 2SCR 107.3.
Bridgian with feelings right now from last year. You're on Death of the Reader. This is review season.
Thank you.
also Herds.
Lex.
Magpie Murders.
Oh, wow. What a great book. Boy, howdy.
First,
I loved it.
First of all, I do want to observe that you constantly used The Magpie Murders the entire way through the review.
Can I tell you, I realized that after I had, like, spoken about it, and I went, oh yeah, it is, I'm not having the, and I think it's almost kind of ironic and maybe on point for me that I kept calling it The Magpie Murders, even though I can remember I'm not having the from the story. Like, I can remember that line, and
it's
yet
such a great bit.
And yet I made the mistake.
The interesting thing with The Magpie Murders, like, I've warmed up to it a lot since we read it, but I think you and I both found it, like, let's just say Andrew Popel carried the show on his backs for the weeks we covered this novel.
I'm sure we mentioned it when we were talking to Popel about it, but there is a version of that discussion which was just the two of us with me trying to solve it, and that version will never see the light of day because it was thoroughly uninspired.
I wasn't
sure what parts of the story to grab, and I don't think you knew which parts of the story to, like, latch onto. Much like when we get to The Lamplighters, you know, that was a book that I didn't entirely grab onto, but you clearly had a strong angle going into it. You loved that book, but when it came to Magpie Murders, neither of us knew what we were doing.
I think it is a book that is at this point in the list, partially just because I think we read it at an unfortunate time.
I would agree.
Of the latest lockdown for us. And I'm so thankful we had Andrew Popel on.
To shine a light.
You know, if we featured it another year, maybe it would have gone higher up the list. But considering the novels that it is around, like, I love Inspector Minishi Investigates and The Master Key. So being in 12th place really is not a bad thing.
At some point, I'd love to go back because we always say what really, like, makes a murder mystery is that second read through and, like,
absolutely,
looking back on it in the future. You know?
Anyway, let's jump into The Master Key, another one of your reviews, Ben.
Yeah.
We'll see you at the end of the show. This is Death of the Reader. You're listening to Review Season.
This is Death of the Reader. I'm your host, Herds, and right now we're continuing up through the tournament list of murder mysteries that we covered on the show this year to determine how easily we could recommend it to your average reader. The next position on the ladder occupies itself in the top of the lowest third of our ranking system in position 11. By no means is this a poor novel, though it is a humble one. A novel that at once told a laid-back mystery while also layering in as many narration perspectives as I could possibly stomach. I am, of course, talking about Japanese murder mystery classic The Master Key by Masako Togawa. The Master Key was chosen for the show at the time in order to continue our spotlight of Japanese authors on the show, and in particular to highlight a female mystery writer who used their own personal experience of life in Japan to fuel their storytelling, set in an apartment building called the K Apartment for Ladies, which is full of aging single women. From the very beginning of this text, it becomes clear that everybody is up to something. Everyone scurries across the floors and gossips with each other when they can, and all are very careful to lock their doors to hide their terrible secrets. The story itself opens with a prologue far in the past of the main event, a man being hit by a truck in the open street, but wearing the clothes of a woman, and a woman waiting endlessly, tirelessly for someone to show up, the filling of a child's grave with concrete as a mysterious observer looks on. Every character in this story has something to hide, and few see all that transpires. This is the concrete, pardon the pun, premise of The Master Key. For one who possesses this master key and a certain level of professional curiosity might unlock the secrets of any one of the women who live within these walls, for good or ill. And all of this is, of course, to set the stage for a story that is equal parts mystery and tragedy. In order to truly understand the heart of the novel, one must understand the approach of one Masako Togawa, passed away in 2016, but throughout this story, her strong sense of empathy can be felt. She was an artist to her core as she lived. Singer, songwriter, feminist, these are all qualities that led to her writing of complex and tragic characters that never felt like they strayed far enough from their paths to dig their way out of the various holes they've dug themselves into. Togawa goes to great lengths to show us the intimate, lonely moments of the women of this story as much as the skullduggery that goes into the action of the novel, such as the action is, of course. This isn't exactly an explosion-fueled roller coaster ride from Hollywood, no, but instead a deliberate character study focusing on people that Togawa must have known, or at least suspected to have known in her real life. There is clearly great care taken to portray the badness inside of each character as coming from a real place, caused by real events that might have happened to anybody. True to her feminist background, Togawa does her best to highlight the ways in which the ladies of the Kei apartments are products of the world around them, including mistreatment, circumstance, and abuse of all different shades, colors, and tones. The narrative itself is framed by a construction project, specifically a highway. The government has decided that the old apartment complex must be torn down so that a new industrious highway can be built over its rubble. It is in some ways a sad metaphor for the characters in the story, but I admire the commitment to the natural events pushing the story along at all times. This is just one more regular, boring event that most people won't think twice about. At least assuming the child's grave hidden in the old unused bathroom under the complex isn't found, which it almost certainly will. This is the ticking time bomb that builds tension throughout the story as we jump from perspective to perspective, from room to room, hallway to hallway, and as the titular master key finds itself in increasingly unscrupulous hands throughout the novel, the reader is constantly asking, who will be the real villain at the end of it all? Is the child George Craft, the four-year-old son of a wealthy armyman who was declared kidnapped around the time the grave was constructed? Is the child a metaphor for the past of these women that they have tried so desperately to hide before it is inevitably unleashed on the world? Well, yes, of course, but it could be both. The ticking time bomb and the feeling that the fates of each of these protagonists was foretold a long time ago helped to build an excellent sense of dread as you turn slowly but surely towards the final pages, searching for the final twist, even as it rears its ugly head from the rubble of the destroyed apartment for ladies. I would thoroughly recommend giving this novel a read if you're looking for something akin to a character study. There are moments of mirth and comedy, but it is much more a sad tragedy than anything else. Masako Togawa has written a story about the lived experiences of the women around her, old ladies with little time left, but a heck of a skeleton in their closets. You're listening to Death of the Reader. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast for all your murder mystery needs as we roll into 2022 for another year of fantastic books, old and new. You're on 2SCR 107.3.
Wheelbarrow Road, right now, off The Glider, a collaboration record by Nick Garbett and Mike Majkowski from here in Sydney. You're on Death of the Reader. This is review season.
R107.3, FM, DAB, on demand, live stream and app.
You're listening to Death of the Reader, and this is review season. Coming in at 10th for 2021 in our rankings is internet darling production studio Rooster Teeth's Little Rooster series. The third edition of this multi-layered interactive video puzzle takes the color-rich room weapon culprit challenge of Cluedo, the layered rhyme of And Then There Were None, and lets an enormous audience run ravenous over it for weeks on end. How does it stack up, both for a curious mystery fan unfamiliar with the studio's antics, and a rusted-on adherent to the wacky comedy Rooster Teeth is known for? Let's hope we can answer that question. Masterminded by Fiona Nova and Josh Flanagan, this video web series features no fewer than 10 members of the Rooster Teeth cast, playing caricatured versions of themselves, guests in the mansion of the wealthy Nicodemus. Their host is shot dead before the show begins, and they find themselves locked away by the police until the case is resolved. The classic Poem of Doom tontine begins, threatening to see all the guests dead before the end of the series. With no way to leave their rooms, they have only video calls to communicate between themselves and outside investigator Trevor. It seems a sure sign that a traitor is in their midst. Unlike many stories of this style, the cast is blindingly unaware of the poem foretelling fatality, but seem nonetheless certain that whoever is killing them will come for them all. Instead, the poem is presented to the audience, along with a list of weapons, asking them to determine which victim and method of death each stanza of the poem refers to, littered with puns as well as a cavalcade of near-indecipherable callbacks to other shows in the Rooster Teeth stable. The poem Dead Little Rooster's Addendum takes Murder Mystery's link to the cryptic crossword about as far as it can possibly go without asking us to fill in our answers in a 15x15 grid. Unlike the previous entries in the series, this poem strikes an astonishing balance between catering to the unassuming general public as well as the rusted-on fans, who continue to unpack the layered meanings months after the show's conclusion. Over the course of the show's initial run, viewers were invited to submit their guesses for the riddles online, amassing tens of thousands of attempts that somehow still only landed one person with a perfect score. It is arguably miraculous that Josh Flanagan and his creative team have managed to strike this fine point difficulty three series in a row. I'm sure various authors through history who ended up bankrupting themselves after underestimating the talent of their readers would have loved Flanagan and Nova on side. The show's narrative is great fun. Putting 10 talented improvisers into their own rooms and asking them to play out imaginary dialogues works an absolute charm, and it's surprisingly cohesive. The show really comes out swinging too, with an avalanche of pitches phoned in to the producer's character Jessica. Let loose by Flanagan and Nova with instruction to create intentionally bad ideas, the whole cast jockeys for attention with wonderful wit, culminating in one of the many deaths of the poem. The show is soaked in quotable lines from start to finish, and I'm sure you'll be referencing them with any friends you coax into watching it. If you are going to watch it with friends, I'd also highly recommend getting a guess at their predictions for the following episodes in writing and tallying their scores for the end of the show. We often have headaches trying to find the right way to allocate our all-important points on Death of the Reader, and it'd be a shame for you to waste the opportunity at a mystery scrap with your colleagues. Speaking of scrap, one of the unfortunate side effects of the structure of the show is that in order for the game to work, the various deaths do have to feel a little unannounced, meaning several plot threads go a little scrapped. By the final episode, unless you're immensely engaged in the riddle, there aren't a lot of hooks to tow you over the finish line. If you've got the time for a binge watch, that would definitely be my chosen remedy to negate the deflation. There's also not a lot of narrative punch to the story outside the wit and game, but I say that in order to manage your expectations, as I think it's right where the show needs and intends to be. Despite both of these trifles, I thought the show's conclusion was actually kind of brilliant. I'm a little torn on describing why I like it because I'm worried my vaguest words will steal the moment. I mean, I even nearly cut that wet blanket of a line. It wouldn't be hard to level some really harsh criticism at this show compared to our usual staple of mysteries with immersive narratives, puzzles, and social exploration, but the reason we've put it here on the list is that despite any critique of low-hanging brows we could hang it from, the show is a genuinely fun, unique, and exciting application of many of the ideas we love on Death of the Reader, and it's been heartening seeing the Little Roosters series continue to improve despite each one supposedly being the last. Taking the social distancing requirements of the pandemic and turning it into a show bound in tiny rooms and told through video screens was exactly the type of artistic restraint that breeds the creativity this show absolutely oozes. Being cleverly silly with a genre that often takes itself too seriously is always a way to my heart, and Josh Flanagan, Fiona Nova, and their team have wormed their way there comfortably. Dead Little Roosters comes in as our 10th most recommended murder mystery venture for 2021, and we'd like to thank Josh for taking the time to give us his insights on how it all came together. The show is available on Rooster Teeth's website for paying members, but there's always a free trial if you want to dip your toes in. If you want to hear our in-depth thoughts on the series, you can catch it on Death of the Readers podcast, and be sure to get subscribed so you don't miss any of our other reviews. This is your Murder Mystery World Tour. You're listening to 2SER 107.3. Well, there you have it. Second episode of review season done for 2021. The last episode of this review season that is in the year that it is featuring.
Yeah, going to be covering a whole new set of books in 2022. The year of the Herds, I hope.
Well, next week is definitely the week of the Herds because it's got three of your reviews.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. I love having to carry the team on my back, and that is what I will be doing. It's going to be a great time.
Alrighty, you are listening to Death of the Reader. Thank you for joining us this week on review season. I hope you have enjoyed 2021 as much as it was possible to enjoy this year, and we'll see you on the flip side.